Hi, everyone. This is Bobby Laporte, your host of Leadership Curveballs, Blind Spots, and Black Holes. Each week, we help busy leaders navigate through complex and volatile times with practical solutions for real-life challenges. This week's episode is about losing one of your star performers, taking a confidence hit when one of your peers undermines you, and our In the Fire special guest, utility executive Greg Corrali, shares how he was asked to take on a troubled flagship project that could have been a career transformer or derailer. So let's get started with our curveball of the week. This episode's curveball is about losing one of your top team members to a competitor, something that many of us, unfortunately, have experienced as leaders in growing enterprises. So picture this. Just when you thought your team was running on all cylinders, your star performer resigns, telling you he's leaving to join a competitor. With all the talent wars and competition for really good people, this can be so disheartening and discouraging. Because this person not only exceeds all expectations, but is one of those special talents who makes everyone else around them better. And he has helped establish your team as the place to work in the company. So if you're honest with yourself, you're not only disappointed, but also concerned about the impact his departure will have on the work your team is doing, and also how it might have a negative mark on your leadership. People in the company are thinking, why is he leaving? And finally, you're probably just a little bit upset about the potential distraction this will create with your team and the amount of time it will take for you to hire his replacement. Your reaction is totally understandable. And in the course of leading in this time of change and of opportunity, this is not an unusual situation. It's very normal to get thrown off course by a curveball like this, to be disappointed, to be discouraged, even angry and resentful. But this is just the opposite of what your team needs from you right now. So how do you approach the situation from a possibilities versus a loss standpoint? I like to call this approach of mining what's good in a situation, stripping it for parts. So let's talk about that. Here are some suggestions for what to do next. Number one, be grateful for what he did contribute and the impact on the team and on your success. This is a very healthy way to start your response. And we know from neuroscience that expressing gratitude puts you and others in a frame of mind to be more open to what can be and set the conversation for a more positive outcome. Secondly, be appreciative for the opportunity you had to play a role in shaping his career. You know, part of your impact and legacy as a leader is being an advocate for people and helping them reach their potential. We all live and work in a small, although global world, and you never know when a relationship might be beneficial to you in the future. Number three, use this opportunity to show your commitment to developing talent. Look at your team's strengths, their skills, their assets, their achievements. Taking this approach will help you thoughtfully define your team's needs to perform in a changing and uncertain environment. And you'll be better equipped to outline the profile of the person that you need to hire. Or you may find that your team has grown to the point where you can reallocate responsibilities to other team members, giving them the opportunity to step up and become the next star performer. Finally, I would suggest that you reflect and examine what, if anything, you could have done to retain this guy. And importantly, how do you build flexibility and depth in your team to minimize the impact when the next person leaves? You know, it's always hard to see good people leave, but that's part of the cycle of developing talent and helping them move on. And by taking this possibilities versus loss approach to the inevitable curveballs that come your way, you're building capacity in yourself and your team to handle future challenges like this, because they surely will happen again. So that's it for the curveball of the week. Next up in this episode is our confidence killer, which starts in a few seconds. And we're back with this week's confidence killer. One of the most frustrating, unsettling, and confidence-killing situations you can experience as a leader is when a peer is undermining you. So imagine that this happened. One of your peers is out to get you. You are sure of it. Let's face it. It's normal to have a certain amount of politics in any organization. There is always the good, the bad, and the ugly, because it's part of the normal behavioral dynamic of companies, because they are living, growing organisms. So politics is normal. But it's different when there are personal agendas. When someone's specific intention is to secure your failure and their success. But you are someone who likes to feel that people have good intentions, that they are to be trusted until they prove otherwise. You are a team player first. You want to assume that everyone is pulling in the same direction, taking the enterprise view, and working towards what's best for the organization. But sometimes this is just not the case. Sure, on the surface, this person smiles and seems cordial enough, but behind the scenes, it appears they're doing everything possible to undermine you. They're talking about how you don't have the leadership capabilities the company needs in an increasingly competitive environment, about how members of your team don't like working for you, that you aren't competent in your job. Perhaps they're even suggesting to your boss that you should be replaced or at least removed from your job. And sometimes, even more overtly, they are actively shooting down your ideas in public settings, making you appear like you have no credibility and support. What the heck is going on here? Well, this is a worst case, but unfortunately not things that you may be overlooking. Maybe your self-esteem really has taken a hit from this situation, and that's reflected in how you're conducting yourself. You know, we sometimes find it more palatable to dispute what we're hearing than really reflecting on if there is some truth in what we are hearing and then acting on it. So that's something to consider. But let's assume for this example that you feel that someone is really aimed at undermining you. So what can you do? Well, here are some suggestions. First of all, and I know this is difficult, but don't assume bad intentions right off the bat. You might be reading the situation wrong. And if we go about inherently mistrusting each other, then we are creating a very unhealthy culture. Number two, though, be aware and alert. Because if you're not aware, you might easily miss gossip or talk about you, and ignoring what's being said will not make it go away. So find a colleague that you can confide in, that you can trust. Share what you think is going on and see what they have to say. It might be true, or you could be completely off base. So getting perspective is helpful. Very importantly, be sure you're keeping your boss informed of what you are doing, the progress you're making, how you're contributing to the organization and adding value. This is important all the time, but it's particularly important if you feel like people are trying to undermine you and they're diminishing your accomplishments and your contributions. By being more intentional about inventorying your strengths and capabilities that you're bringing to the organization, that helps to promote yourself and also to build capacity in yourself and in your team. And finally, connect to the bigger picture by offering to help others. This might seem counterintuitive when you're in a tough situation, but when we are faced with a challenge in a difficult situation like this, paying attention to the needs of others takes the focus off our problems, helps us to grow and to build the personal resources and resiliency to face future challenges. You know, in the end, you might find that this company is not aligned with your goals and values, and you may have to consider a decision to leave. But in the meantime, navigating this from a positive capacity building perspective will assure you can take on any future confidence killers head on. So that's it for our confidence killer of the week. But don't go away. In the Fire is up next and starts in a few seconds, featuring special guest utility executive Greg Corrali and how he handled a tough challenge. We're back again with In the Fire segment. Today, we're joined by our special guest, Greg Corrali. Greg is an experienced utilities executive, former COO of Hydro One in Toronto, Canada, and an executive at a number of utilities in the U.S. He's currently consulting and advising with different utility companies and organizations. And today, Greg's going to share with us an assignment that he was asked to take on that is definitely an in the fire challenge. So Greg, tell us about this particular challenge.
This project is actually a few years back at this point, but it was so instructive to me in retrospect once I was complete with it that I thought it would just be of value to share kind of what happened. So, you know, I was hired at PG&E to run electric and gas operations. And while I was in the midst of executing in that role, I was in my office one day and got a call from the president of the company. So I reported to the executive vice president and she had reported to the president. So I get a call directly from the president and says, "Hey, Greg, how are you?" And I knew him. I had a good relationship with him. And all of a sudden, he kind of springs on me. "So, Greg, we need you to run our flagship information technology project. You know that $2+ billion smart meter project that we've got going on? And we're not necessarily doing real well with it. You kind of see the headlines on the San Francisco Chronicle and they're not very positive. We need you to take that over immediately." And I literally didn't say anything for about 10 seconds. I was like in shock. And he finally spoke up and said, "Greg, are you still there?" So I said, "Yes." I said, "Chris, you realize what I'm in the midst of here, right? Changing culture within electric operations, which is what you guys hired me for." He says, "Yes, I am." "And you realize that we're in the midst of a somewhat of a company crisis here with a botched rollout of this project." I said, "I do. I absolutely do." So it was odd that I got a call directly. I found out subsequently that, you know, my boss knew that the president was going to call me. So they kind of caught me off guard. And I will tell you, you know, a lot of things were running through my mind when I got that call. I was literally, I mean, think about it. I was put in a position where I couldn't say no. When I was thinking of my career, I was thinking, well, here's a high profile, high risk, a $2+ billion project and it wasn't going well. But the president of the company was asking me to do it and, you know, saying all the right things, right? "I've got confidence in you. I'm sure you can execute on this and do the things that you need to do." And I literally was thinking on the phone, if I don't take this, my career is done here. So, you know, I had been in industry for 25 years at that point. So I ultimately said, "Yes, I'm a good soldier. I'll take the project on, whatever you need me to do." Now he said, "Well, we need you to do it immediately." I said, "Well, the other little wrinkle in this is I've got a 2-week European vacation coming up that we've been planning for a year and I'm leaving in 2 weeks." All of a sudden, there was silence on his end for about 10 seconds. And I was like, "Chris, are you still there?" He says, "Yeah, but we need you right away." Right? I said, "Well, look, let me see what I could do." Make a long story short, I postponed a European vacation. My wife wasn't too happy at the time, but the company made up for it for me. So long story short, I took the assignment and it was certainly worthwhile.
Wow. So that's definitely an in the fire challenge. So how did you go about it? Cause I do remember at that time that all the news about the smart meter program and many challenges involved in that for sure. So what was your plan? How did you go about it?
Well, you know, I was certainly apprehensive. So here I was leaving, running an operation of a few thousand people. And now I was asked to take on a project team of, let's say, about 200 people plus some vendors. I mean, it was a totally different project. I wasn't familiar with the technology. I wasn't familiar with metering technology per se. I was running large operations and I was a general manager, so to speak. So I was apprehensive about the technology, the skill set that I would need. But, you know, like anything, I've got a certain approach and I kind of dove in. I literally moved from my office, which was way up in the corporate office with the project team down on another floor. And, you know, I found lots of concerns, just like the president said I would find. I had a team that needed to be spruced up in terms of talent and skills, did not have all the right skills on the team. They needed a new project plan. And worst of all, they were in the midst of the rollout and spent more than half the money already on the project, but yet weren't half complete with all the rollout and project implementation. So they were over budget, they were behind schedule, they needed a new project plan, and we needed some new talent on the team. So I was faced with all kinds of challenges, quite frankly, and in retrospect, which was kind of great for me because I like to take on projects that need help and departments that need help, and I like to fix things. So that's kind of the situation that I walked into.
So there were definitely some risks involved in, as you said, in either accepting or not accepting this assignment. So you accepted it. So at that point, when you discovered all the challenges and the things you had to do, were you having second thoughts about, I'm here now, but now what do I do, right?
Yeah, well, and there's no doubt the expectations were high. The president, we were having weekly meetings, maybe even more frequently that in terms of some calls. And, he and others were being very demanding. And yet I've got a certain approach about me. I mean, I needed to come up to speed. I needed to learn everything about the project, what was going right, what was going wrong, and what really needed to be done to get things back on track. So my boss, the chief on this project, the chief customer officer, I had the relationship with her and I would meet with her daily, of course. And she was terrific because she kind of was a bit of a buffer for me and shared with the board and the president to say, hey, let this guy get his feet on the ground here, assess what's going on so he can come up with the best plan and come back to us and say, here's what we need to do to fix it. So she was terrific. She did exactly that. We ended up reforecasting the entire project, ultimately going to the board of directors and asking for more money in order to finish the project, but in a very detailed fashion. Here's exactly where we're running over. Here's what we're going to need to finish the project. I had already then changed out some members on the team and infused some new talent. One of the other things I did was let go a number of the vendors on the project, because vendors, as you and others know, at times they like to glom onto a corporate organization, and it's hard to really see the positive impact they're having at times. So I assessed all the vendors and literally got rid of almost half the vendors that we had on the project, or certainly the ones that were ineffective and I didn't think we were getting any value from. So we were cost cutting, even though we needed more money to finish the project because the project was over budget. Mm-hmm. So we put a new project plan together and we just started executing. And, certainly it wasn't that easy. We ran into all kinds of issues. I had to develop new skills. I was in front of city council meetings all of a sudden, talking to politicians, and our customers and town officials weren't happy with us. The project was not going well. There were concerns about meters, right, and the whole radio frequency issue, and does it cause health effects? And so we were partnering with third parties to produce studies to calm fears of the public. And a lot of that ended up being really positive for us. But, I was in the fray. Now I had to get into the fire, so to speak, with my team. And that was challenging. But in terms of learning, it was a tremendous opportunity for me and others on the team.
Clearly. And so what was the outcome of the project? And what would you say were a couple of key takeaways for you?
Yeah, in the end, the board approved our reforecasted project plan. And I was on a project for about a year. And we probably were, I would say, 85 to 90% complete with the project at that point. So we had to transition. I had to transition to a new leader and for them to finish it off. But in the end, we had real positive results, as I had mentioned, with some of those third parties. We calmed a lot of the customer fears, but we also got in front of a lot of customers, whether they were town hall meetings, city council meetings. I had done some interviews with the San Francisco Chronicle and with the San Jose Mercury News. We had found some problems with meters, and we proactively called them and said, hey, you're familiar with the project. We found this issue. We wanted to let you know about it, and we wanted to tell you what we're doing about it. And I'll never forget, the reporter from the San Jose Mercury News said, wow, this seems different. Is this the new PG&E? Well, you know, we said we wanted to be more transparent. We wanted to be proactive. We want to let you know everything that's going on with the project, good and bad. And projects this big, right, they're going to have issues. And we've had issues. Right. But here's what we're doing to fix them. And we're going to keep you informed all along the way. So, you know, I developed some more of my media skills, you know, interviewing with members of the media and reporters. My team did as well, because many of them were with me at a lot of these city council meetings. We interacted with politicians. We certainly received more board of director exposure. So that was certainly helpful for my career and for others on the team. Had to develop a lot of negotiation skills, renegotiate contracts with vendors. And then also there was obviously a lot of technical learning on the project. So, you know, when I looked back after a year being on that project, and I look back now, 33 years in the industry, there was probably that 1 year I learned more than at any other point, and certainly more than any other 1 year stint in my entire career. So it was fantastic. It was challenging. It was difficult. It was rewarding in the end. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Wow. That's definitely an in the fire challenge for sure. Thank you. Thank you so much for, thank you so much for sharing the experience with us. I really appreciate it. So again, thanks to our guest today, Greg Corrale. We hope that this week's episode of Leadership Curveballs, Blind Spots, and Black Holes provided you with some practical solutions and insights to the challenges you face as you navigate your own leadership journey. So join us next week for another episode. We'll see you then.